Hello, and welcome to the F News podcast, a new show we're doing in part with Free Radio SAIC and F News as a means to start getting more information about SAIC to the public and SAIC as an organization. If you're not part of SAIC, welcome. And SAIC stands for the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, an art school connected to long-running Art Institute Museum. So basically, if you haven't listened to our first show with Emily and Mika as the hosts, what we're doing is basically kind of coming together and doing two different shows twice a month about a number of different topics. Their show is going to be about politics and SAIC as a community, whereas this show is going to be more about arts and entertainment within the SAIC and arts community in Chicago. So each month, Emily and Mika are going to be doing their show, and I'm going to be doing one show with a guest. And this week, my guest is Jake Hill.
Hey.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Jake, before we jump into our topic today?
Totally. I have gone through pretty much most of the different realms at SAIC here, kind of investigating what it means to be an artist in our contemporary scene. I'm coming out of this with a focus in both developmental and cognitive psychologies, looking at the intersectionality between art and the developing psyche as a means of maybe facilitating aid and health, as well as looking at what art can do as its implementation towards a greater community outside of the walled classic ideal of what we see in galleries and art and museums and whatnot. I'm trying to kind of investigate a little bit of those connections, and I think that that's, you know, one of the interesting reasons why I'm here today, Jesse. Thanks.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you were one of the first people I thought of when I thought of, a giant guest list for the next couple of months that we're going to be doing this.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to find out very quickly that you are so easily able to articulate just your thoughts and feelings, and your host, who is me, cannot so much. So, maybe we'll have I think that makes for excellent chemistry.
Great, yeah.
And it's funny because I don't think I introduced myself.
Yeah, we kind of skipped over that part. I wasn't sure if you wanted to go into that or what.
If you're just going to be this mysterious.
Yeah, figure. I mean, the other, that's cool, you know?
Yeah, right. So my name is Jesse Tuttle. I'm going to be the podcast host for this specific show. And I'm doing arts and entertainment because I'm really most interested in dissecting media that is more of the 20th and 21st century. I've always just been super engaged, and to the point where I started wondering, like, why do I love media so much? I just kind of want to talk a little bit more about those kinds of things with the show. Why don't we get started with our topic today? Okay. Which is
the propagation of art through public medias and distribution of, you know, the communication between the general world and that's more been ingrained in the artistic scene.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Or if we're going to put it on a title sequence, is art being related to
right,
everyone?
Yeah. Is
art
what
open
is,
to everyone?
Yeah, the access to arts in the public scene. You know?
Yeah, totally. I think it is an interesting conversation because all of a sudden we kind of start having this a wider discussion of what kind of art are you talking about?
Right. And I think that gets into the whole question and two of the classic conversation between the capital A and the little A in art. You know, when we've currently in this, the scene that we're in right now, have established this art as a noun, as a placement or an adjective of a greater collective. There's an ascension towards it. There's a study of it. There's a means within its operation, but it's not commented upon as something that's a tool as much anymore. The smaller A of art that we tend to see sometimes written or thought of in the general scene of like people who don't identify as artists or doing art, artwork, art museum, those types of things. And I think that there's a lot to be said about the fact where the general access is much greater when we consider it as the reality that it is, a tool by which we connect, organize, propagate all those types of things, different ideas, concepts, and theories, you know, communication of feelings or thoughts or, you know, a recognition of the greater communities by which we are a part of, the recognition that we are, you know, amidst a time or present in a time, which I think is more honestly, you know, although we sometimes forget it or sometimes think past it, the point or the means by which art is. So.
Yeah, right. And, you know, in at our school, and I'm sure in other art realms, we like to use the phrase, you know, art with a capital A, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
And, you know, I think the conversation kind of shifts to whoever you're talking about. I think it's interesting to think about it for us as art students. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in a couple of years, we graduate, and all of a sudden, well, that doesn't change the fact that we're still probably going to be thinking about art as the general, right? You know, I tend to think of, I mean, you and I are in the same boat where this cup of coffee could be an art piece, right?
If you
think about it. But, you know, then we also have to think about, well, you know, do my parents think that? Mm-hmm. And my dad just recently was having this conversation with me, and he was very introspective about it.
Right.
Where he was saying, I keep seeing this sign on the back of the stop sign, mm-hmm. and it says, "This is not art." And I keep thinking about that. I'm not really sure. And I mean, my dad's pretty art savvy.
Yeah, but like, totally.
I think he wants to have this conversation with me because, you know, he just had like. He doesn't go to work and no one is really having this conversation, right?
Yeah, totally. And that's the challenge, I think, too, with the aspect of that art and art interpretation is completely subjective. Right. And it's shooting, though, it seems it shoots to be this thing that has this objectivity to encompassing a greater community or an idea, whatever it is, when it really does come down a lot to how we see or how an individual sees the world, that it justifies or qualifies their definition, their concepts of what art is, you know, that isn't something that's stable.
Right, exactly. And so then, you know, that raises this question of, well, okay, so if people are hungry for that kind of information or to know whether or not this stop sign is art, mm-hmm. right, you know, where do I go for that? Do I go to my local museum? Do I go to a much smaller, you know, maybe one or two room museum? Mm-hmm. Do I talk to people in my office about it? And I think this is kind of why this is a very interesting conversation of who is the one who confirms that / where is a place where you can have that conversation more openly.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. And I think that's the challenge too right now and something to maybe work towards or consider, especially with your dad's, you know, situation where he goes to these environments, goes to work, goes home, goes wherever he's going and is met with an otherwise challenging situation where, and I wonder if it's the feeling that people, since we do operate in this concept of this capital A art, is there this expectation that you have to be versed in a topic to talk about it? You know, if you don't know the history of Van Gogh's paintings or the subjectivity of Matisse, you can't comment on the effectiveness of graffiti. Or the presence of something that is in the world beautiful and by definition is art, you know. And I think that also it leads into this potentially a very different conversation sometimes, but people's assumptiveness about what creativity is and this aspect of them prescribing this concept of creativity being the means of art making. And art being such a narrow thing, creativity being the means for that such narrow thing, and that we feed this disconnect between, you know, everything in the world being art, anyone being able to critique art, you know, when it is being communicated towards the general public, you know, art is made for the general public, for the general consumption, 9 times out of 10.
Right.
You know, we don't have this hierarchical society anymore that, it, you know, friezes were only made for those who could pay for them. You know, public art museums are a thing. They are, you know, galleries are a thing. They're made with the means for public consumption. And yet we still feed this, you know, hegemony of that only those who are skilled in interpretation are able to comment upon it, you know, where it's hard because I think it is generally something that does need to be considered a public project or a public endeavor, you know?
Right. Yeah, definitely. And so then, you know, that this also begs the question of, so, you know, if your idea of art isn't movies or, you know, the television that you watch, right, or right, the signs that you pass,
yeah,
and it's paintings on a wall, and, you know, then you go to a museum where it is just paintings on a wall, you know, is it doing a disservice to not be opening those conversations? Or do you think it's doing its job, just kind of a lot saying, this is what older societies would refer to as just the art, and is what you kind of think as of being art. And I think this is why, I've been thinking about this a lot, mm-hmm, in terms of,
totally,
who's right now, who's doing a better job, or if that's even a question, you know, of, our much older museums, like the MoMA, you know, are those like the ones to go to, or is it the smaller museums that say, hey, this picture, this doodle that Salvador Dali, scribbled onto a napkin one time, you know, depicting, an arm with one eye and a goofy nose, is art. And that, and, you know, then it sparks this conversation with maybe someone, who isn't so art savvy. Right.
Definitely.
And thinking, oh, well, you know, if him scribbling on a napkin is art, then maybe other things that aren't on a canvas are art.
Mm-mm. Right. And I think to that point too, it boils down to what is the immediacy of its access? You know,
right,
what is the accessibility of something that can, you know, an artistic medium like movies, like canvases, like, you know, or paintings, like, you know, whatever they are, you know, what is speaking more effectively to an individual or to a society in general, that comes into the question of, you know, is MoMA or is, you know, let's draw Massachusetts back into the example for a second. Like the Massachusetts, like MassMoCA, the Massachusetts Museum of Contemporary Art,
right,
is a museum designed and defined by its contemporality, where the question is then raised, what is more in, you know, provocative or indicative of representing the contemporary appeal, something put in a museum geared towards contemporary art, or something that is spray painted on the side of that building.
Right.
You know, and I think that it's hard to then, I think maybe the mistake sometimes, or the challenge, not even a mistake, but that's the challenge of entering into this conversation, is that we continue to sometimes see the history behind creation and like what has been made in the past, you know, these centuries of art making in that sense, ever since the beginning of reflexive thought, there's been art making,
right,
you know, to this conversation of like what is current, what is representational at the moment in time. And I think one benefit, you know, to take the, you know, our own, you know, AIC here in Chicago, the Art Institute here in Chicago, into consideration is that you have this, even there, where both are, you know, engaged or both are questioned in that sense, this enforced definition and separation between the two of them, as even though they are abutting buildings, they are two separate buildings. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a section that is dedicated to the contemporary art, to the modern art, mm-hmm, and there's a section dedicated to the history, you know, to the representation of societies through creative or artistic means, you know, and that there's still separation seen between those two things. So rarely, it seems anymore, are we entering into a conversation where both are considered.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And I didn't, you know, even as we were talking about this and a little bit earlier and setting it up, I wasn't really thinking about that. You know, I think it's very easy to think about museums with more popularity who are well known with having older works of art. You know, to not kind of have the two, but yeah, I mean, that's to give them some credit. I think they do a really good job of saying, if you're interested in contemporary work, you know, it's over here. It's, they're not together.
Right. Right.
I don't think they would work well together.
Yeah.
Right. Especially because, you know, sometimes I think it's so easy for someone to, if you're somewhere where the two are kind of close together, to look at one and then all of a sudden judge the other and say, oh, well, you know, I could do that with the contemporary work, right?
Right, totally.
Or say, oh, you know, this is too dry for me with the older work,
mm-hmm,
you know? So, you know, it kind of works in its favor, and then to split them up. But it's also interesting thinking, like, you know, does that still do a good job?
Of course. But I think it also comes down to the affirmation subjectivity of it all. But,
yeah.
You know, where we, even here, even in this conversation, and it represents or it shows how hard it is to get away from it sometimes.
Right.
But the idea of making good and bad art, or better or worse effectiveness of communication, or whatever it is, mm-hmm. You know, this system by which we seem to judge across the board entire eras or histories or modes of creation and of art making. And when it really, it's hard because it comes down to the whole aspect too of, you know, there was a question raised about this, you know, sorry for the digression momentarily, but, you know, surrounding the Tate Museum, you know, when the Tate was putting in their new photo wing in that sense, and the fact that it was a continuation of the same room that they had their Renaissance painters in. Mm. It was just an elongation of that space. And a lot of people had a problem with that because they felt like you're skipping entire centuries,
right.
You know, between these quality and aged and professed pieces, you know, that, you know, really represented what it means to be an artist with these new, more experimental pieces of documentation and photography. And the exact same question was then raised on the other side of individuals embracing the exploration behind these photos and their dating and their kind of, they're being forced into this comparison with these classical paintings. And it all comes down to all of the critiques about that, all of the questions about that. We're not surrounding the quality or the subject matter of these pieces, but we're completely based in merit of good and bad or well done or ill done art. You know, is
right.
This a means that is communicating well or not?
Mm.
When it's really, it's hard to say that because to an individual, yes, that's completely true.
Right.
You know, there are pieces that speak wonders and give people access to things that are just shy of godly. And there are pieces that really I would not qualify as being nice. And that's one person's opinion,
right.
You know, and that's, and the challenge of that, and that's hard because, you know, I'm going to come to a piece, you're going to come to a piece, anybody is going to come to a piece, and it's going to have certain resonance for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some pieces, for example, that have more of a, you know, ubiquitous access to them and, you know, that have a stronger resonance to a general population. But all of that comes down to how you see the world. You know, there are certain individuals that just get bored with paintings, you know, and that's who they are, you know, and that their access to means and media is much more digitally based or much more digitally oriented. And so, you know, film, video photography speaks more to them. You know, there's nothing different in a painting or a photograph,
mm-hmm.
You know, in the what it's communicating. The only difference comes by which the method it's being shown. And all of that comes down, you know, all of it comes down to, you know, approaches or interests or the ways that you're thinking, the ways that you're coding for the world, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, another thing that I've been thinking about was, you know, if you can think of one of your favorite, I guess just exhibitions that
mm-hmm.
kind of opened the conversation up for this discussion of, you know, whether or not you think it's legitimate or whether or not you think it's good or bad,
mm-hmm.
You know, you're thinking about it a ton. And I've been thinking about this a lot because, I was meeting a friend of a friend, and basically they were saying something along the lines of, oh yeah, I don't really do art. And I think that's very interesting because
yeah.
It opens this discussion of, you know, well, you know, do you like songs? Do you,
right,
you know,
right,
do you like
exactly.
music? Do
yeah,
you like,
yeah.
Do you watch TV occasionally?
Mm-hmm.
Do you, you know, did you drive by an ad and say, oh yeah, you know, I like,
mm-hmm.
I, now I'm in the mood for a Sprite.
Right, there you go.
You know, that's right, like that's art.
It's
and
art, yeah.
I kind of had to say that. And I think after that, this created this conversation in my head of, you know, when was a time where I went to an exhibition and really thought, you know, went from that place of, I don't really know art very well, to, oh, okay, I think, I get it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if it's not an exhibition, if it's a specific body of work. But, you know, then something else that we can talk to you about and mm-hmm. and kind of go into why it did such a terrific job that it did.
Yeah, totally, totally.
If you want to look one up, I can talk about the one that I've been to.
Yeah, definitely. No, I mean, I think that that is a really interesting question. And I think that it comes down to, you know, it's a lot to try to balance, I think, thinking about the merit or the influence between those two things. And I guess to draw, again, try to, you know, do my best to access a local comparison, but the somewhat recent, it's about 2 years now, retrospective for Charles Ray, that was done here at the Art Institute, and where his pieces were displayed prominently and, you know, effectively, throughout an entire space, and granted many, many, you know, rooms, gallery spaces to represent these pieces in static representations, in static spaces. And, you know, each one was designated its own gallery space, you know, with a decent maybe 25 feet around it. And they were approached in a way very classic as kind of Conrad boxes, as these vignettes, you know, by which each one was supposed to have its own merit or resonance. And a lot of conversation came out of that. A lot of flack, a lot of praise, a lot of everything. But the conversation was diversified so much more and made so much more interesting, I think, by their choice of putting one in the grand garden outside of the AIC, which is, if you haven't been, really beautiful place. You know, it's really nice. Go, there's some trees, giant ass, you know, big ass fountain.
Is that right outside of the diner downstairs?
Yeah, it's right downstairs.
Or the restaurant?
Right.
It's really good.
It's a beautiful, beautiful garden.
Yeah. Also good food.
Great, also very good food, yeah. You know, not to have a promo for the second, but if you ever want to have a nice little meal downtown, go to the AIC's museum restaurant. It's very good food. But
they're sponsored this week.
Right, exactly, yeah. You know, but right in the prominent, you know, of this entire space, they put one of Charles Ray's pieces, which is called A Distant Man on Horseback, which in and of itself is no different than his other pieces. You know, it's a cast piece that's shown and glossed and has, you know, a subtle hint and reference to testing of space and space and proximity, which a lot of his pieces do, while also having a contemporary commentary on, you know, his present thought and his present, you know, situation to the media and the news at the time. But in and of itself, it stood as its own piece. You know, it had subtle, it played a subtle homage to the Three Horsemen by saying that it was personifying both birth and death simultaneously, you know, in the rider of the horse being, you know, anatomical, but the rider of the horse carrying both the scepter and the spear, where, you know, the idea of praise and the exultant, but also like this, you know, condemnation and this, you know, encroachment of death. All of this, though, was diversified by the fact that it was put outside and it was the only piece he had that was outside. And so then we, you know, any specter, any viewer was then asked in their mind, in their own qualifications, where is this better merited? Is this better merited physically thrust into the public? You know, you don't have to pay to see this piece. It's literally just there, surrounded by trees. Anybody who comes from, you know, Goldman Sachs or CNA, you know, to eat their lunch amidst, you know, stock brokerage, sees this piece. Or are they pieces that are granted static, you know, vacuous spaces in which nothing but the piece is being referenced or exalted? And so that became a really big thing and a big question too, which spread out into a much broader scope of, you know, curation, aesthetics, public versus private art, all that. But to me, I think the main reference that came to me, you know, having done sculpture and having done, you know, have these questions before, is the questions of frames, and framing of a piece, context of a piece, you know, and what is granted or gained by the method and the mode by which you frame it. you know, and this is not something that's foreign. I mean, any painter, anybody, you know, I'll do two directions and, you know, tell me if I'm talking too much. Any painter is going to think about the frame they choose to frame their piece by. You know, is it going to, what is the comment that's being said and the relationship between the finishing that they put on it and the subject matter behind the piece? On the other side of this, anybody who engages in a new setting, you know, you go out to a show, you meet new friends, you go hang out downtown with someone, you go out to a bar, whatever it is, you know, is going to engage in, you know, identification framing, you know, putting themselves in context to the people around them, you know, and that's a humanistic thing. That's just what we do. It's not something we think about. It's completely, sometimes we do, but it's, you know, for the most part, unconscious, you know, but it's what we do to navigate our surroundings. And it's the conversation we have internally with ourselves to problem solve being in a new situation.
Oh, yeah.
And so here we are, people, you know, Chicagoans, or people coming to visit the AIC, put in this conversation now of where is this merited? You know, where is this, you know, specifically with his pieces, which are having a social commentary to themselves, you know, individually, but also this, you know, kind of subtle influence of, you know, the fable as well that's being brought into a lot of his pieces as well, which makes his pieces so beautiful, is being confronted by static or, you know, kind of contemporary conversations. You know, are you going to put a piece that's going to be focused, you know, in a space that's going to focus it? You know, or are you going to put a piece that is going to respond to its surroundings? You know, and that's, anybody is going to ask that question. You know, anybody, any curator, any, you know, person, you know, just mowing their lawn or putting flowers in their lawn is going to ask that question of what is the relationship between these two pieces and what do I have to do to make this most aesthetically pleasing, you know? Anybody getting dressed in the morning, you know, you put on a blue tie, you put on a red tie, which one looks better with your shirt? You know, you're going to make that decision, you know, so that it becomes down this whole cycle, this whole, you know, kind of expansive conversation around what we do and how we justify these aesthetics of context and framing and, you know, situation that we ascribe to or enable the art to kind of exist within.
Wow. So, at first glance, when you saw this, did you kind of go through this existential experience?
His pieces? Yeah. I literally had to sit down for a couple hours actually after seeing the pieces, because it was a very interesting show. It was also the entire top floor of the Modern Wing. For anyone who's gone there before, it was huge.
Yeah.
You walked a lot to see them because there was a lot of space. So like you were tired after it, and that makes sense, you know? I had to sit down afterwards to just think about the fact of like, well, how am I even going to approach with this? Because, you know, in an hour or tomorrow or whenever someone asks me, what do you think of the Trial Ray exhibit? I have to have processed these thoughts that I'm having now to even be able to respond or to be engaging in this, if you want to call it critique or commentary or questioning. You know, I hadn't had anything formally concluded by that time, but, you know, I had kind of these connotative experiences that kind of had merit to them, you know, had expressive merit to them. And so I think that was something that I really was left really questioning afterwards too.
Right. That's interesting, is this idea that you leave I always try to analyze during and like right after experiencing art. And sometimes it's really hard, you know, you go and you're like, I don't really know how I feel about that piece. Mm-hmm. And then I find that some of the most interesting art that I've experienced is stuff that I tend to think about just, months later, or whether I wake up the next day and I think about it, just intrinsically without even thinking too hard. Maybe a couple of weeks I start talking about it to someone else and I start thinking like, wow, I really had a lot of thoughts on that. I didn't realize.
Yeah, yeah.
Leaving a place and saying, oh, that was really good, doesn't necessarily mean that it's that important to you, right? Sometimes it's just like acceptable. But I think this idea of, you know, I don't know how I feel. I think I have to sit down for a second.
Right.
I think I have to comb over it by doing other things. Maybe, you know,
yeah.
I focus all my energy on making a sandwich. And maybe in the back of my mind, you know, maybe I'll think about it a little bit more, have a conversation with someone else, about anything else. And then, you know, kind of thoughts will start coming in.
Percolating, coming through. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Definitely. Yeah. I actually, I had to read this book, in one of the classes that I have. Called Black Hole by Charles Burns. And this is a comics class.
Oh, cool.
And so this graphic novel is probably 300, 400 pages. And I kept putting it down because it was just the art in it was just so disgusting. But, you know, that really worked in its favor because it was talking about the uncomfortable stage of being 16 through 19, you know, kind of late teenage periods and what that means in terms of like sexuality, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, sex at that awkward is very janky and uncomfortable and, you know, no one really wants to have a conversation about it. And so this book did a really good job of kind of having, it was almost like surrealist in a way.
Definitely.
Of having these images where I kept looking and I was like, oh my gosh, this is gross. You know,
mm-hmm.
people got unibrows and hovering over each other. And you know, they like no one looks attractive, which is again is, which really works in a story where, you know, it's kind of finishing up your puberty and all that. And so finally I finished it today and I thought to myself, wow, I really hated to read that, but it did a really excellent job conveying the kind of tonality that it was going for.
Definitely.
Right. And I think that's super interesting is, either being not, I don't know. I think that's something that I've been more interested in, like recently, because I've been realizing that, good or acceptable, finger quotes, isn't necessarily the same as important. Right. You know, you can see a movie and you can go, wow, it was really good. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of forget about it the next day when your friend asks how the movie was.
Right.
But I love this idea of like, oh, you know, I think, you know, I'm experiencing a lot of things and I don't really know exactly how I feel about it. But
right.
I think, you know, I know that it's really important right now in this moment.
Yeah.
So the one that I remember going to was
it was
in 2014. But this French artist, let me see if I can, Celeste Borsier Mugnot.
Celeste Borsier Mugnot. I don't know how to speak French either. So, but it looks like that. Sure.
Right. Exactly. So he basically came with this exhibit. I don't know if it was specific to the New England area, but this was at, I saw it at the Peabody Essex Museum.
Okay, nice. Yeah,
in Massachusetts.
Totally.
And basically, he just set up a room full of electric guitars, some birds, and he put some birdseed in the guitar, or like by the strings. And then he just let a bunch of birds kind of fly around. There were itty bitty birds. I'd have to figure out. Oh, they're zebra finch birds.
Nice.
And he kind of just let them fly around and, you know, pick at the seeds. And while they were doing that, their feet would strum on the guitar. And it was really amazing. It was kind of the first performance I had ever seen. But you know, I was probably 17, 18 at the time. And in that moment, I remember really thinking, it really clicked for me. And I was like, wow, we have basically handed over money to just let something figure itself out for randomness to just play itself. And, you know, this is kind of up to chance, but,
right.
you know, us viewing it as such, it has made it art. And I mean, it was really beautiful and hilarious at the same time. But I just kind of remember thinking like, even if it wasn't like this idea of I'm experiencing this right now,
mm-hmm.
And thinking about it is super, and is just very incredible. It is important.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think that even opens up a second level too of this, to further the whole conversation around, levels of the art conversation.
Right.
But this investment in concepts, this praising or this, financially or otherwise, but this just committal to an idea versus this, committal to the application of this idea, to even rope back into, the exhibit that was here a while back. But the whole aspect of what is the connotation? How much do we read into the connotation of peace, and how much do we read to an execution of the piece? Here you have this, like you were talking at the one that was at the Peabody XX, this fugue that's being created, this entire sensorium that's being created for you, in which you're being activated in so many different ways. So much of you is being activated in so many different ways. Where the whole definitions between modes and functions of art, do kind of get a little bit, blurred or, skewed. And what happens when we aren't seeing something through only one lens anymore, which I think is really powerful, especially right now. And I think that it's, I think even, there's a very talented woman. She's a sound artist named Christine Sun Kim, who herself is, interestingly enough, being a sound artist, deaf. These creations that she makes are effectively sculptures, that she's playing in the moment, and she's creating these sounds and explorations of these things. But all of this is visual for her. She's creating, auditory sculptures that are existing, and her level of access is one plane, and the community, the hearing community's access is another plane. But it becomes this blurring of these definitions of how we see art, when two different people are kind of come into it, or even, the same person's come into it and experience it on two simultaneously drastically different levels, but that blending that comes into it too, in that sense, that I think that, you could say theater does that, if you want to think of it that way. You're having this, classic rhapsodes of these Shakespearean pieces, who are saying these beautiful, beautiful, beautiful pieces of poetry, who are also immersed in this experience that is most times visually pleasing, in that sense. And so what comes into this then next level of consideration when we start to open up that scope?
So, Jake, I think we're just going to finish up with a couple closing thoughts.
Great. Awesome.
So overall, if you had to choose one specific exhibition, or maybe a museum specifically, mm-hmm. What do you think is a place where you can go and have this kind of open conversation, or think more openly, mm-hmm. About this? Or who do you think is opening up this kind of conversation?
Totally. Yeah. I think at least, again, trying to stick as much to local as possible, but I think the Chicago Cultural Center, it works in a variety of different ways, getting a lot of different people in there. But they have a really wonderful stratum of people working with the artistic side, as, curators, artists, makers, really attempting and really focusing on trying to get the showing of art and the creation of art outside of the conversation of history, and more into the conversation of, the place and surroundings that it's in. And I think even last February, for anyone who was able to see it, it was called the Hey You exhibit. And it was kind of commenting on the, here in Chicago, in that sense, it was called the 1550 International, Interventional, I'm sorry. And it was getting one person from all the different 50 wards of the Chicago community to make a piece.
Oh, wow.
To represent them, their ward, whatever it was. But it really, it gave this ability to kind of access this tapestry, almost, visual tapestry, or in some cases, auditory tapestry, sound-based works, of really what Chicago is, and what Chicago was, where and how Chicago, members are thinking and processing and entering into the world.
Yeah.
And it gave a lot of, honesty towards the contemporary thoughts and issues of the area at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that it really enabled a lot more of the kind of the greater Chicago community brought into the conversation of the art world as well. To, yes, these are being practicing artists that are being shown. It's not necessarily you're going out to the street and saying to any Joe Schmo, make an art that represents your community. But I think that it does enable individuals who have a much more strong connection to or placement in their local communities to kind of be able to, you know, kind of speak to or speak on their own experiences rather than just a conversation around, you know, this, you know, quality, merit, all those types of things that tend to be what kind of domineers those conversations.
Right.
So I really praise the Cultural Center for their abilities to just, you know, incorporate and get, you know, these, still using the word contemporary, my apologies, but these, you know, current perspectives and these, you know, somewhat, you know, based on publication, atypical perspectives in as well.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely. I think I have to talk about two different ones. Which seems unfair. It's like when you make a top five and number three is two different ones together,
right.
And you're like, oh,
right.
This is top six.
Right. You've tied for second. You now have six things.
Right. You know? The first one is the National Museum of Mexican Art, because it so does what you and I were talking about, where it puts so many different things kind of in the same room. Mm. It's a smaller museum, right? It's, I think it has three rooms. Ultimately, or with three different exhibits with maybe one or two rooms each. I think, you know, but they make that work in their favor of putting a work that has to do with one another kind of collectively together, but it's different mediums, which I think is super interesting.
Definitely.
And definitely opens up that conversation that you and I were talking about earlier. And then the second one, of course, is the MCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art, also here in Chicago.
Yeah,
these are all Chicago based.
No, totally. We're in Chicago, it makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, and that one is great because, I mean, you and I have gone to a couple together.
Sure. Right? Yeah, totally, yeah.
And I think whenever I go, I always just find whoever I end up going with, I have a great time having a conversation with. And I find myself always wanting to go back. You and I went to the Mirakami exhibit.
Right, yeah, right? Exactly, yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know, it was like an awesome artist.
Yeah, totally, totally.
And whose work is like almost Walt Disney-esque.
Yeah.
Right.
In a weird skewing too of the whole, like, it has this cultural aspect, but also like he did work with Kanye or something like that, like
right.
On one of his albums. So it's like, it's a really breadth of work that he does.
Yeah.
You know, or the use at least of his work.
Right. You totally. Know, yeah. And yeah, like I think that was an awesome way for, you know, people who, you know, if you're interested in Kanye West, you go and then you see more of his work. I think they've been doing a really good job reaching out to like younger generations.
Totally.
Which has been really fun. A new one that I was just telling you about, Michael Raskowitz. His work is all about basically just like how American media finds itself and affects different countries. So this one specifically was about American media in Iraq. And basically how Star Wars has affected Iraqi citizens.
Love Star Wars.
Which is amazing, yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
You know, and there's posters of like Darth Vader all over. Someone recreated a poster from scratch using different bodies of work. It's really
wow.
great.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so anyway, they keep me always wanting to come back for more. So
yeah, definitely.
I really respect them.
It's a great institution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Overall, you know, that's why you and I are talking about this. You know, arts and education.
Yeah, no, totally.
Entertainment.
Education, entertainment, you know, it's
right.
all, you know,
I'll
people
wrap up into one.
Learning from the media around them, you know, that right. type of stuff, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think this was a good show. I think overall,
definitely.
I think this was a fun conversation. I'm happy. I think you fit super well into the audio world.
Yeah, totally. Thank you for letting me be a part of this and trusting me in my noviceness around speaking into microphones. not a huge public speaker, but now I'm not public, so that's cool.
Right. Exactly. We can just let it play its let it do its own thing.
Yeah, play its course. Exactly.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know, I also do a radio show. One of my favorite things is that, like, you know, they do okay online, you know, they get anywhere from like 10 to 30 listens.
Totally.
for show. But then there's one,
one very tap specific, in the back,
one very specific show where just everyone was listening to. It was something very specific. It was like '80s one hit wonders or something.
Yep, that was a good show actually.
Oh, thank you.
So fun fact. So Jake used to get really bored when he was working Friday nights. So he would turn it on in the background of himself working. Yeah. And it was really actually great to hear. And anyway, so this '80s one hit wonder show, which was one of like everything, you guys. It's fun. It's great. It's here. But it went into this like whole conversation about like pedagogical aspects too, which was kind of cool. And it was really interesting, actually.
Oh, fun.
You know, yeah, it was really cool.
That's awesome. Well, maybe you're one of the...
I am surely one of the 20 people that listen to your show.
That's good. Cool. Well, thanks, Jake.
Definitely. Thank you, Jesse.
This has been a great conversation.
Yeah.
And I guess you'll hear from us next time here on the F News podcast.
There you go.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.
I gotta think of a better.
That's the way the cookie crumbles.